Hey guys, what is up? Welcome to episode number 18 of Being Famous Podcast. I am your host. My name is Cliff. As always, I appreciate you guys checking me out. For more information about me and the podcast, please visit my webpage, beingfamouspodcast.com. Facebook and Instagram are at Being Famous Podcast. Speaking of Facebook, Facebook has now gotten into the podcast game, which means you can now listen to all episodes on my Facebook page, which is simply Being Famous Podcast. Find the podcast tab and you are good to go. Just as a reminder, guys, the podcast operates off the generosity of donations. If you would like to show your support and throw your boy a few dollars, you can do so right now by donating to my PayPal account. It's safe, secure, and simple. My PayPal account is info@beingfamouspodcast.com. That's info@beingfamouspodcast.com. And of course, guys, any dollar amount donated is greatly appreciated. If you make a straight donation of $100, you will score yourself some fresh Being Famous Podcast swag, which includes a t-shirt. I have all sizes available right now. A coffee mug and 3 high-gloss Being Famous Podcast stickers. To view the merchandise and to donate, visit my webpage, beingfamouspodcast.com. Now, here we go with episode number 18. Let's get on with it. You've seen her in Watchers, Tequila Sunrise, Dragon, The Bruce Lee Story, Dream a Little Dream, and many more movies as well. She also dated the late, great Corey Haim back in the 80s. And oh yeah, her uncle? Yeah, Frank Zappa. Very interesting. I'm sure she will have some fantastic stories to share. Let's welcome to the podcast, calling in from the City of Angels, Los Angeles, California. Her name is Lala Slotman. Lala, welcome to the podcast. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here, Cliff. Thank you for having me. Let's do this.
There we go. I like that, Lala, the positive energy. Sounds like you're ready to roll. As I just mentioned, I know you're calling in from LA, one of my favorite places in the United States. How do you like Los Angeles?
You know, I have a love-hate relationship with LA. There's things about it I love. I grew up here, so it feels like home. There's a lot of people here that I love. There's a community of 12-step programs that I'm very tied into. And I don't think I've been to 12-step programs around the world. And I feel like LA has a superior, you know, community for that. Of course, I haven't spent a lengthy amount of time in other cities to have those connections. But as far as meetings are run, they feel better here. But I also find the rent to be astronomical, the parking to be a nightmare.
Oh, yeah.
just the congestion, and most of all, although I'm a little more removed from it now, but when I was growing up, in my 20s and 30s, the competitive, like, what's your car, what project are you working on, that energy can create for a very... if you're already dealing with low self-worth issues, it can make it even harder.
For sure.
Those are my cons.
Yeah, I hear you. Definitely not a cheap place to live. Have you ever thought about moving?
Oh my God, so many times, but I'm a chicken shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to lose my community. I don't want to lose my friends. And I'm afraid of what I would do because I work in production.
Sure.
So I don't know what I would do, say, in Portland or
right.
Bethany, Oregon. These are places that I've thought of going to. I've even thought of going to North Carolina, but I'm allergic to dogwood trees.
There you go. North Carolina, the state that I am in. I am in Charlotte. Lala, that's a dogwood trees. That's an interesting allergy, that's for sure.
Yeah, because I have asthma. They said I was allergic to dogwood trees when I was 8. And I was out there with a bad asthma attack.
Okay, that makes sense because the pollen out here is dreadful.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't do well with that.
Yeah, probably not because it is pretty dreadful. But to your point, Lala, in regards to LA, yes, very expensive. The rent is not cheap. The parking isn't the greatest. But to me, it is a really cool city that has a lot to offer. And yeah, if you could afford to live there, I think it would be really cool.
It is. Yeah, it is. It is. There's that you can find just about everything out here. It's fascinating. An hour drive away, you can feel like you're in Greenland. You know, it's like There, it is beautiful. It's amazing.
For sure. Where exactly do you live?
Studio City.
Okay, cool. I was actually there the early part of summer. We drove through Studio City. How long have you lived there?
6 years.
Okay, cool.
But I grew up in Studio City because my Aunt Gail and Frank, who I grew up with, lived on Laurel and Mulholland. So I went to the same school my daughter goes to, Carpenter.
That's cool. And you mentioned Frank, of course, Lala, that being your uncle, Frank Zappa, who we will talk about in just a bit. But yeah, like I said, I was in Studio City in the early part of summer. Very cool spot. Really dug that area.
Yeah. Where do you stay when you come here? Do you stay with friends?
No, just typically, you know, Airbnbs.
Oh, good. Nice. And was Studio City one of the last Airbnbs you were at?
We actually stayed in Topanga. And when I'm referring to my wife.
Right.
But we stayed in Topanga. And as many times as we've been to LA, I've never been through Laurel Canyon. So because of its rich history and its music history, wanted to check out Laurel Canyon. So drove through Laurel Canyon. Obviously, Studio City is right outside of Laurel Canyon. So yeah.
Oh, nice. Did you stop at the country store in the middle of Laurel Canyon?
Of course, you can't go through Laurel Canyon without stopping at the country store.
Awesome. Awesome. I'm on the wall in there. Did you see the big group photos? Crowds of people standing in front of the store. There's like 10 of them because Tommy, the owner, he used to do a yearly group photo. And Christina Applegate and I are in about 8 of those.
Nice.
Because we both lived in Laurel Canyon.
Very cool. I did not see the group photo, but the that store is a very cool store. The country store in Laurel Canyon. And so wait, you lived at some point in time in Laurel Canyon?
Yeah. When I was married, my ex-husband and I had 2 houses in Laurel Canyon, 2 different ones. Yeah. And of course, my Uncle Frank was in the burned down cabin on the corner of Lookout and Laurel. That was his first house. It's across the street from Houdini's place. Tommy at the country store knows how to take you. There's an underground that goes underneath Laurel Canyon from Houdini's house to the log cabin. Underground passageway for him to let out his lady friends that he would have in the night.
Really?
Yeah.
That's wild.
Tommy took me down there. I mean, I didn't go all the way through across, but yeah.
That's crazy. What was it like?
It's dark and spidery and scary, but cool, you know?
Yeah, no, that's very cool. I knew Houdini lived up there, but I didn't know he was pulling those types of tricks out of his sleeve. That's really bad. But that's a very cool story, though. So Lala, what's the story behind you being, because I know you mentioned it earlier, what's the story about the pictures and you being on the wall and all that sort of stuff? What's that about?
Well, because I would go to that market every morning and I became pretty close with Tommy, and he would invite me, you know. He'd put up little flyers on the wall, like, this week at 9 a.m. on Saturday, we're all going to meet. So I would show up because I felt like it was my store and my community. And Christina would be there because she grew up there. She grew up there with her mom and stayed there as an adult.
In Laurel Canyon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's really cool. Of course, Christina Applegate, probably best well known for her time on Married with Children, where she played the role of Kelly Bundy, but has also done a ton of other stuff. Lala, do you still keep in touch with her?
Well, on social media, kind of we were pregnant at the same time, had our babies like a month apart. So run into her occasionally, but I haven't, not, you know, I don't do a lot of phone conversations with her, but.
Yeah, sure. I get it. And, she's still up there?
She's still up there. Yeah.
Very cool. Have always liked Christina Applegate. Lala, let's move on from Laurel Canyon. But before we do, for all the listeners out there listening, if you're ever in LA, do yourself a favor. Go check out Laurel Canyon, go drive through Laurel Canyon, make sure you check out the country store. Obviously, Lala is on the wall, but it's just a cool spot. A lot of music history within Laurel Canyon. A lot of actors, actresses, and musicians have lived there through the years and obviously still live there to this day. Do yourself a favor, make sure you check out Laurel Canyon. Lala, you live in Studio City. I had a former guest on the show who lives in Studio City currently, and I am sure you know this gentleman. His name is Matt Adler. Lala, do you know Matt Adler?
Of course I know Matt Adler. I didn't know he lived in Studio City.
He does.
Aw. Yep, of course I remember him from Dream a Little Dream.
That's right. He played the role of Dumas. Lala, have you run into Matt Adler over the years?
I have not run into him or talked to... I went to his wedding.
Okay.
That would have been 90 or 91. Because he married my friend Rhea, who was also in the film.
Yep.
And they're no longer married, but... You know, I did go over to their house after their wedding, a couple years after, but I haven't seen him since then. So it would be like early mid-90s since I've seen him.
Gotcha.
How's he doing?
Seems to be doing good.
Right.
From having him as a guest on the podcast and following him on Instagram. Yeah. I mean, I don't talk to him, but right. He seems to be doing pretty good.
What is he up to? What's his hustle?
Voiceover work.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
He always, to me, had a little bit of a Sean Penn vibe.
Okay.
You know, like during Dream a Little Dream, I thought there's a little Sean Penn edge to him. Can you see it?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. he's a surfer, so maybe you're picking up on that.
That's right. Wasn't he in a big surf movie?
He was. Do you happen to know the name of that movie, Lala?
Oh, shit. Give me a minute.
Not a problem. Take all the time you need.
Point Break.
It would not be Point Break.
Different surfer movie.
Yes, different surfer movie, but that is a good guess. Would you like to try again, Lala?
I know the name.
Okay. What you got?
Do I need to Google this shit?
No, I can just tell you.
Yeah, tell me. Tell me.
North Shore.
North Shore. Of course. How can I forget that one? North Shore.
Exactly. An 80s cult classic. So, Lala, how did your acting career begin?
So, my uncle is Frank Zappa. And my cousin, my idol, my mentor growing up was, of course, Moon. And as I was, you know, she's 5 years older than me. So when she was 13, doing the whole Valley Girl stuff on Solid Gold and, you know, making the rounds, I caught the fever. I was going to high school in Santa Barbara. I got run over by a car.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. And my Aunt Gail stepped in. Moon's mom, and she said, I don't want you to see a doctor in Santa Barbara because my ankle was crushed. I'm sending you a limousine. You're going to come move in with me in LA, and I'll get you to Cedars-Sinai because I don't trust the doctors there for this particular operation. And that was that. I moved in with Frank and Gail. Well, I had lived with them many times prior when I was little, like 11. Also been there many times, but at 15 is when I moved in and started auditioning, getting an agent and auditioning for films.
Okay, cool. So I was going to ask at some point, I might as well ask now, Lala, you've mentioned his name a few times, of course, Frank, that being your uncle, Frank Zappa. Lala, what was it like living with Frank Zappa?
It was so interesting because there's nothing conventional about it as far as parenting goes. And he was so out there, but it wasn't drug related. You know, he didn't do drugs at all. I think he smoked pot twice. He said in his book, and he's talked openly about it, having had like a hit off of two separate joints in the 60s and realizing I never want to feel that again.
Interesting.
But
and I would have never thought that, sorry to interrupt you, that he wasn't a drug user, but he wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah. No, never did acid. You know, he'd have the occasional red wine with a good Italian meal, but he wasn't a drinker. He didn't do drugs. He literally, his drug use was limited to two different joints, and he didn't smoke the whole thing. He had a drug addiction with cigarettes, you know, not that that's the equivalent, but he smoked three packs of Winston's a day for many years.
Yeah, that's not good. So was he living that, I don't know, however you want to say it, kind of like that rock and roll lifestyle back in the day, but without the drugs?
He was living that lifestyle in the 70s, 60s and 70s. But I mean, so Lowell George was in his band at one point from Little Feet. And my mom's boyfriend at the time, Gary Barone, they were snorting cocaine. They were on tour with Frank. They're snorting cocaine in the bathroom, and Frank's caught them, fired him on the spot. So he didn't allow that shit around him. But as far as the women backstage and the groupies and that whole scene, it definitely was the 60s, and he wasn't like into that whole hippie flower power vibe, but he was a genius, and he was on tour constantly, and he had ladies all about.
Right? Yeah, I'm sure. So Lala, I'm just trying to understand the time frame. So exactly how long did you live with your Uncle Frank and Aunt Gail?
I was there all the time from 2 to 8. And then I moved to Paradise. And I came down twice from Paradise to stay with them for a few months. And that was at like age 11. But I moved in from 15 to 19. I lived there. Yeah.
Gotcha. What years would that have been?
85 to 89.
85 to 89. Okay.
Yeah. And he died in 93. He got sick. He was sick, diagnosed like 5 years prior to that. So that would have been like 87, 88.
Yeah. And unfortunately, your uncle, Lala, as you well know, would go on to pass away from prostate cancer, as you mentioned, in 1993. Lala, there are quite a few of the Zappa children. You mentioned Moon earlier. That would be Moon Unit. Sounds like she was your idol, your hero, your role model growing up. Of all the Zappa kids, was she the one that you were the closest to?
Yeah, she's the one that was had a career first as far as show business, And then Dweezil followed shortly after. He released his first record when he was 15. And all of them feel like brothers and sisters to me, but Moon was sort of idolized her. She's so funny and so creative, and Amit too. Amit is the most hilarious creative person I know. The two of them are in my top five of like living, creative, hilarious people that I know. Moon and Amit are at the top of that list.
Good stuff. And the Zappa kids are Amit, Diva, Dweezil, and Moon Unit. Lala, where are the Zappa kids at today? Where is Moon Unit?
Moon is a couple miles. She's in Toluca Lake. Amit is in Hancock Park. Dweezil's in Toluca Lake, and so is Diva. All three of them have separate homes in Toluca Lake.
That's cool. It sounds like three of the four are really close to each other.
Yeah.
Lala, I was doing a little bit of research on Dweezil last night, kind of forgot about the guy, but I looked him up, and I tell you what, man, he still looks, he's not a kid anymore, and he still looks fantastic. He has aged very well.
Dweezil's always looked fantastic. Dweezil really had, he's got the green eyes, but the Italian, he's gorgeous, yeah, and he still looks great.
When's the last time you talked to Dweezil?
I haven't talked to Dweezil in a few years, since Gail died. Gail died in 2015, I think. When that happened, there's been a little bit of a rift between the brothers and sisters, some legal stuff. So it's kind of split the family up a little bit. It's very sad, but I'm not surprised. My Aunt Gail and my grandmother, Tutu, did a lot of this favoritism with their children and triangulating with their family members. So-and-so did this, so they're not allowed. My Aunt Gail did a lot of that. So I'm not surprised that after she leaves, she left them with a trust unequally. So there's some stuff going on. But I love each and every one of them. They're like my home. They're like my brothers and sisters. I'm sure Dweezil and I will eventually get there,
Family drama, man. Seems like we all have it, one way or another.
Yeah.
Lala, tell me about the names. This isn't Jill, Mark, Bob, and Sue, right? This is Amit, Diva, Dweezil, and Moon Unit Zappa. What's the story behind the names?
The story is that Frank wanted to, Moon being the firstborn, Frank wanted to, if she was going to be a boy, wanted to name her Motorhead. And luckily she was a girl.
Yeah, wow, exactly.
So she got Moon Unit. Dweezil, second born, has no middle name. Amit there was a composer. I don't remember his last name, but I think it starts with a Z. Classical composer that Frank really liked. That's kind of the only music he really listened to. He was aware of music, the contemporary music, but he listened to classical music. That one composer's name was Ahmet. And then Ahmet's middle name is Amuka Rodan. He has two middle names. And then Diva, this is the best one. Diva is the last born. She was born, I think, in 79, 80. Her middle name is Thin Muffin.
Wait, what? Did you say Thin Muffin?
Yeah.
yeah.
And Dweezil was the name of Gail's big toe. You know, when they were, before Dweezil was born, Frank had a nickname for Gail's toe, and it was Dweezil.
So Dweezil is named after your aunt's big toe.
Right. But the animal name is like, so if we had a bird, a cockatoo, and it was Frank's bird, the only word he said was Frank. He said nothing else. He would just be like, Frank! Like,
awesome.
And his name was Bird Reynolds. This is in 78, 79. And then Gail's favorite cat, Frank's favorite cat was Gorgo, Siamese cat. She was cremated. She lived to be 21. She's in a gold box with her name on it. And if you shake it, you can kind of hear.
Oh my goodness.
Her body in there, like, you know, the ashes of her body. And then Gail's cat was black and white cat, tuxedo cat. Her name was Almighty, Midnighty, Black and Whitey, Fighty Bitey.
Hey. And there you go.
And I mean, these are just, you know, a few names of the animals. And there were there was a plethora. There were dogs that we had a pet alligator at one point. My dad brought over. My dad brought baby raccoons over. I mean, there was just constant madness.
Yeah, that sounds like mayhem.
Yeah.
But I got to say, the name for the cockatoo, Bird Reynolds. There you go. Now, that's pretty clever. Lala, you've mentioned your dad a few times. What's his story and where is he at?
So my dad's here in Studio City. He's 70, he's going to be 72. My dad is a Vietnam vet. But my dad's here in Studio City, and he just had a baby.
Wait, what?
With a 34-year-old mom from my daughter's school who already has three boys.
Well, isn't that lovely?
Yeah. So there, that might sum up a little bit.
Wow.
What I mean. Why my life has taken the turns and gone the courses it has.
Yeah. Well, man, that's pretty crazy. So, I mean, Lala, obviously, you know, I'm sure there's a lot more to the story, but obviously, you clearly didn't have the smoothest upbringing. Between your parents, your father and your mother, you know, I guess which parent, you know, I don't know, which parent did you prefer? And obviously you lived with Frank and Gail for a while. So how did Frank play into all of this and into your upbringing?
I mean, my dad was always, as far as parents, my dad was my favorite. And I always like longed to be with him because he was a Disneyland dad. He was not consistent. He was always late. Sometimes I'd be outside waiting and he didn't show up at all. My mom was physically abusive and had a heroin addiction. So I always just wanted to be with my dad so badly. And Frank was a big part of Frank, out of my whole family, both sides, my mother's side and my father's side, there is a lot of addiction and mental illness. And Frank was like the one consistent adult in my life.
Yeah.
Like I never felt, you know, I was intimidated by how incredibly smart and gifted, talented he was. But I never felt like if I walk into the room, he's going to either be at a 10 or at a 2. You know, like there wasn't rage, screaming, and then all of a sudden everything's fine, which was kind of baseline with every other adult in my both sides of my family. But Frank was always consistent, and I adored him. He, like, you know, when things got really bad, he's who I would turn to talk to stuff about.
Wow, gotcha. Yeah, sounds like Frank Zappa was a decent man for sure. Lala, what about your mom?
So I left my mom when I was 8 because she was too violent. And that's when I went to Paradise with my dad and his second wife. And I didn't really talk to her again. When I moved back in with Gail and I was dating Corey, my mom still lived in LA, and she'd gotten drunk and drove her car through a building, and the state of California made her go to AA and took her driver's license away from her. So she got sober. And then, you know, a couple years into her sobriety, and then, I think that was it. I was 19. I'd just broken up with Corey, and then I was with Chris when I was 21. So it was like I started to have a relationship with her around 21. And she was a different person because she wasn't so erratic. She wasn't on drugs. She wasn't drinking. She was in AA. But unfortunately, my mother, she committed suicide when I was 26.
Damn.
So that I have, you know, we only really got close from 21 to 26.
That's horrible. I'm really sorry to hear that.
Ah, thank you. Yeah. It is horrible. Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. On a lighter note, Lala, let's get back to the story. You did mention a few names just then, and I want to circle back around to that. You mentioned Corey, of course, that would be Corey Haim, who we will talk about in just a bit. You mentioned Chris, that would be Chris Robinson, the guy that you were married to for a couple of years. Chris Robinson is the lead singer of the Black Crowes. But Lala, let's get back to the story. Let's get back to how you got involved in acting. So let's circle back around. You were in Santa Barbara. You get hit, of all things, by a car, and you end up in L.A.
Yeah.
At that point, how did your acting career begin once you got to L.A.?
Moon and Gail were like, this is what you need to do. We'll get you an agent. We'll get you some pictures. And Dweezil and Moon had an agent called Sandy. Her name was Sandy Dudek. She was at ICM, and Gail had her meet with me. Well, it's, you know, it's crazy. Moon had an audition for Keith Coogan is in this movie, Adventures in Babysitting.
That would be it.
Okay, Moon had an audition for that, and I went along to her audition in crutches. I'd just been run over by the car, I had to wear this brace and cast for like 6 months. But I went to Moon's audition with her, and the casting director saw me in the waiting room and called and said, can we have this girl read for the Elizabeth Shue, the main role? We saw her in the waiting room. We want her to read. So I went back in my crutches. I had no idea what I was doing, and I read for it. And because of that, Sandy Dudek was willing to meet with me, and I got into some acting classes, and she sent me on some auditions, and I started booking the things she would send me on, like Tequila Sunrise. Dream a Little Dream was literally Corey Feldman and Mark Rocco gifted me that part. Because now this is insanity too. It's so insane.
Hold on a second, Lala.
Okay.
I want to hear that story, but hold on 1 second. I want to go back to what you just said.
Okay.
So you actually end up reading for the lead role in the movie Adventures in Babysitting just from being in the lobby or in the waiting room and, you know, I guess the casting director seeing you.
Yeah. Being in the waiting room with a cast and crutches.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. And obviously, you had no idea what you were doing.
No idea. No.
That's pretty wild. How do you think you did?
I'm sure I was horrible.
Right? That's nerve-wracking.
Yeah, very nerve-wracking. I hadn't even been in an acting class yet because I'm still in a cast. I just moved in with them.
Yeah, and that's my point. I mean, it's pretty crazy that, you know, you've never acted, you've never read for a casting director. So for them to want you to read for the lead role in Adventures in Babysitting, it's pretty crazy. I know it was a long time ago, but what did the casting director even say to you? Do you remember?
Well, this casting director, because she had seen me, she knew I wasn't an actress. So,
right.
She was already, if I can remember correctly, she was already like, so you've never done this before, and this is how it goes. You know, she was very sweet about it. I've had also other casting moments that are not sweet, but she was very nice. and, you know, tried to make me as comfortable as I could be.
Sure. When they asked you to go in and read, were you excited or were you scared?
No, I was so excited, but I was petrified. I mean, petrified. Because of where I come from with my family, particularly my dad and my mom, not so much living at Gail's house, although there was a lot of stuff with Gail too that was that made self-worth and self-esteem difficult. I had very, very low self-worth from my childhood. So I wanted to be an actress really, really bad. I wanted to be famous. I wanted to make that kind of money and drive that kind of car and be noticed and have people want my autograph and be on. I wanted all of that, but I didn't feel I was capable of being good at it. Because I didn't feel pretty. I didn't feel good at anything. It's taken me 40 years to, because I'm doing a film right now, and it's the very first time in my life that I'm actually like, holy shit, I was good in that scene. And normally I'm like, I can't watch it. Pump Up the Volume was one movie where I was like, oh, okay, I'm kind of funny.
Yeah, there you go, for you sure. Yeah. Yeah.
I still pick apart everything. You know, there's still that like that inner child that never felt safe.
Yeah, unfortunate for sure. Lala. You mentioned Pump Up the Volume. Of course, you played the role of Janie that starred Christian Slater. We're going to get off of the adventures and babysitting story in just a minute, Lala, but I wanted to ask you, did you get any sort of feedback after you read for that role?
I mean, the feedback was that Sandy at ICM, which was at the time one of the biggest talent agents in LA, was willing to sign me. So that was pretty good feedback. I might have had a callback.
Wow.
I might have had a callback, and I think I did, because I think my Aunt Gail's secretary had to take me in her Volvo. Catherine, she took me to my callback. Yeah.
Well, damn, that ain't bad. I mean, you had never read before and you end up getting a callback.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And an agent.
That's right.
I got a callback and an agent, which was, that's just like a miracle. But you hear a lot of stories like that, I think. I have.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So have I. It's just crazy the way that things work out sometimes. So at this point, Lala, you got yourself an agent. Is she now sending you out on auditions?
Yep, she sends me out on Tequila Sunrise, which is Michelle Pfeiffer. I can't tell you how many times I watched Grease 2, Cool Rider, and Scarface, and Witches of Eastwick. I mean, I was like obsessed. I wanted to be Michelle Pfeiffer. And I read for that. And so this is what Sandy said. She said, I'll send her out on a couple auditions and see how it goes. If it goes well, I'll sign her. She sent me out on Tequila Sunrise. I booked it. I mean, it was one line, two scenes, but I booked a Robert Towne movie with Michelle Pfeiffer. Then she sent me out on
and Mel Gibson and Kurt Russell.
Yeah, of course. Yes, of course. not a bad cast. It was amazing.
For sure. Are you taking acting classes at this point?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I'm in some acting classes. I think, who was in my acting class that you, Elizabeth Berkley.
Nice.
Do you remember Elizabeth Berkley?
Of course. Jessica Spano from Saved by the Bell.
Yes. And then, of course, that movie of hers about stripping in Vegas, which was incredible. I think I want to say Scott Grimes was in my acting class, too. But I could be wrong. But Amit and I took the same acting class. And then I took some acting class. You know, when Moon was much more serious. So she was studying with somebody named Roy London. And I went and joined some of those acting classes, a little more methody, a little more scene study. I took every class I could. I took Tepper Gallegos, which was like a commercial auditioning class. Amit and I went to Groundlings together. We did a Groundlings couple weeks. Michael Hitchcock was our teacher. And I took every class I could. I wanted to be good at it.
Good stuff. I like it. The stripper movie that Elizabeth Berkley was in, that was Showgirls, and you mentioned Scott Grimes. Scott Grimes is a guy who has done a ton of stuff as well. Lala, a few minutes ago, you started to tell me the story about you landing the role and how you got the role in the movie Dream a Little Dream and Corey Feldman and all that. So go ahead and share that story with me because I know there's a story behind it.
Okay, this is an incredible story. So my Aunt Gail is wanting me to get emancipated because I'm 17, 16, and she's concerned that my father is going to take any money I earn. I don't know if this was founded in any reality, but it could have been. So she's sending me to court to meet with a judge to get emancipated. When you get emancipated, you can work longer hours and you're an adult legally. You can, you know, a lot of kids get emancipated that are actors because they don't have to be on the set school. They don't have to do as many hours in school. They can work longer. They can work like a 12-hour day instead of a 10-hour day. So while I'm in court, Corey Feldman is down there getting emancipated too with Mark Racco, his next film's director. Corey's getting emancipated because his parents are stealing his money. And he says, I know him through Corey Haim. He says, will you, you know, since you're here, would you be a witness for me? And I was like, okay, if I can help. I mean, and then I got questioned for Corey Feldman's emancipation case. And Mark, you know, was there. And he said, you know, I'd like you to come in and read for my movie, Dream a Little Dream.
Nice.
And I was like, okay, I'd love to read for it. And I went in and I brought Corey Haim with me and my friend Rhea. Rhea Pavia was like my best friend at the time. So the three of us went in. We had this great time and this audition in the waiting room. Mark came out and was like, oh my God, Corey Haim, like so excited to meet him. And it's so crazy sometimes how this shit happens, but Mark was in the middle of some sort of a divorce issue. And we all ended up at a bowling alley, and in the midst of getting some really bad news over the phone about his family, his personal life, he, like, I could tell he just was like energized from all of it and like a little bit like not in his right mind, and he just pointed at all of us and said, you got a part, you got a part, you got a part, and walked out. And that's how Rhea, Corey, and I got cast in Dream a Little Dream.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. That's a great story.
It's nuts. It doesn't usually happen like that.
Yeah, for sure. Lala, you mentioned Mark Racco. Mark Racco, of course, the director of Dream a Little Dream, had some mild success back in the day producing and directing some things. Unfortunately, Mark Racco would pass away in 2009 at the age of 46.
Yeah.
So, Lala, did you actually have to go in and physically audition for that role, or were you just given the part?
Yeah, I did audition for it, but because I came with the people I came with, my audition turned into a little more of a party and a hangout. You know, when you bring Corey Haim with you after Lost Boys and License to Drive, you're probably going to have a little more of a hangout after the audition.
Yeah, no doubt, because at that point, you know, he's a full-fledged celebrity, especially with those two movies, License to Drive and Lost Boys. Lala, let me ask you this. By bringing Corey Haim to the audition for Dream a Little Dream, how much do you think that played into you getting that part? Because you alluded to it earlier, when Mark Racco saw him, he was basically starstruck by Corey Haim.
Yeah.
So having him with you at that audition, how much do you think that played a role in you getting the part?
I think it had everything to do with it. I mean, yeah, Mark wanted me to read for it before knowing I was Corey Haim's girlfriend, but and that's why I was called into that day. But I think it had everything to do with it, and it had everything to do with my third movie, which was Watchers. That was Corey's movie, and he said, "I want my girlfriend to play this part," and we literally like left North Carolina to go to Vancouver to shoot Watchers. I did audition for it, but he said, you know, I want her to have the part. You need to give her the part.
Nice. Corey hooked you up. Lala. Oh, yeah, too. Also, you mentioned leaving North Carolina. You're referring to leaving Wilmington, North Carolina, because that's where Dream a Little Dream shot, which is only a couple of hours from me here in Charlotte. Lala, at the time of shooting Dream a Little Dream, how old were you?
17. 16 or 17. I think I was 16 or, I don't remember exactly. 86. I was either 16 or just turned 17. I don't remember what months we were shooting it.
While you were young. So Lala, in that situation, what happens? The studio puts you up in a hotel?
Yeah, we were at the Shell Island Resort. All of us were there. We were there for 3 months. You know, you get per diem, which there was nothing to do there. There was one mall. So we would all go to the mall on the weekends and spend our per diem at the mall, like stupid little kiosks that sold like weird silver engravable jewelry. We all had some sort of, like I got Frank a Zippo and I had FZ engraved on it and I sent that home.
Yeah, for sure. Might as well spend that per diem money. Lala, speaking of, do you remember what that per diem money was per week back then?
I think it was like around $236. It was like, for me, it was a standard scale per diem, $236 a week.
Yeah, that's not too bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas Corey and both Coreys were getting, I think, double that because, you know, they weren't making scale. They were making their rate.
Yeah, that's not too bad. I mean, especially being a teenager and making $500 a week in per diem, it's not bad at all, especially back then. Lala, what was it like working on the set and being a part of Dream a Little Dream?
Oh, man, it was a blast. It was a blast.
Oh, boy.
Rhea and I would try to... So we became obsessed with Billy McNamara because he was so quiet and mysterious, right? And he came in later. We had all been there for a few weeks, and he flew in later, and his room was next door to mine. So Rhea and I were like, we were going to this spy store trying to buy these, like... hear through the wall things like with cups and weird cables. None of it worked, but we were trying to spy on Billy McNamara the whole time and having parties. I mean, I have photographs of like Harry Dean Stanton coming to my room for late night parties. And he said to me, he was drunk. He said, "You're a 100-watt light bulb. You're a fucking 100-watt light bulb."
That's pretty funny.
And Meredith was like, "That's a pretty great compliment coming from Harry Dean Stanton."
That's great. Lala, William McNamara, Billy McNamara played the role of Joel. That's funny that you guys were, you know, buying spy kits and trying to spy on him. That's pretty funny. And of course, Harry Dean Stanton, a legend. He's been in a gazillion things. Lala, let's talk about Corey Haim. Where did you guys meet?
We met at Amit and I went to a movie premiere, and I think it might have been Witches of Eastwick. I'm not 100% sure. Or some movie. We met Corey at an after party.
Okay.
And we started going to this place called Alfie Soda Pop Club. I don't know if you ever heard of that place.
I have not, actually. What's the story behind Alfie's?
So there was a guy named Alfie. And he was connected to this guy named Randy something. Randy owned New York Seltzer, which was like a little seltzer water flavored. They had like root beer flavor, cherry flavor. And he had a commercial in the 80s where he jumped out the balcony of the Mondrian Hotel and landed on a big, you know, airbag thing. But he was this wealthy guy in L.A. who had like all these panthers and lions and... I don't know why he started this. They started this Alfie Soda Pop Club, which was for actors under 18. It was a nightclub.
Okay.
Dance club. So Alyssa Milano was there. Nicole Eggert was there. Scott Grimes was there. All of us were there. It was at the Roosevelt Hotel, and it was just like a dance party that happened every weekend. And it was all a bunch of, you know, David Faustino, Christina Applegate, all of us were there, underage, dancing, drinking New York Seltzer.
Hey, why not, right?
And Corey wouldn't stop, like, following me around and begging me to go out with him. And I wouldn't because he had a little bit of a reputation of being a ladies' man. I was 16. He was 15. You know.
So wait, a ladies' man at 15 years old?
Yep. Yep.
Legend.
Yep. But I finally gave in.
And that was it, huh?
That was it.
Lala, what did you and Corey Haim do on your first date?
I think there wasn't like a date. He asked me to come over, and as I got into the building, there were stairs to get up to his apartment, and there was flowers on the stairs, and then we just kind of hung out, and he played music. Like, he was really into synthesizers and played some music for me, and that I think that was our first date.
All right, that's cool. Sounds, you know, rather innocent, and that's cool that he was into synthesizers. Of course, it was the 80s. Lala, who was he living with at that point in time?
He was living with his mother, but this wasn't even his apartment. This was his assistant's apartment. He did live at home, and Judy and I became very close, obviously, because I was there almost every night. And then, you know, there was a point in time when Corey's drug addiction got really bad, and my uncle wanted to try to adopt him.
Oh, wow.
And he, you know, asked him to come stay with us, and he wrote this long letter about staying away from nose candy and what a great kid he is. And, you know, Gail and Frank loved Corey. They really did. There was some traumatic stuff Corey had been through, and Corey had opened up to Gail about it and me, and so they felt very protective of him, and he moved in with us for a while, and Frank literally was going to adopt him. Like, I was their niece, and they didn't try to adopt me.
Right, but you're not Corey Haim. I'm kidding.
But Corey was, you know. And then eventually Corey got his own apartment in the same building as his mom, and the drug use got too much, and we broke up like 8 times.
Right. Yeah, been there, done that. I know how that goes. So Lala, at that point in time, does that kind of stuff get leaked that he moved in with Frank Zappa and he moved in with you, his girlfriend? I mean, does that stuff get out kind of to the public and, you know?
No, but anybody that came up to the house, like Annie Leibovitz or there was another photographer, like a rock photographer, this woman, Liz something, she, you know, when people or even there was people up there to interview Frank, Gail would say, interview Corey or take pictures of Corey and Frank. So there is footage of like Corey being interviewed about what Frank Zappa is like on our front lawn. And there's footage, there's photographs that Lynn or somebody took of Corey and I in my room. And I think some of it made People magazine, but it wasn't in the article that he was actually living there.
Gotcha. Yeah. That wouldn't be the case today with social media. That is for sure. Lala, outside of, I guess, his drug use, how was the relationship between you and him?
I mean, it was great. We were, you know, codependent relationship, like both coming from unstable childhoods. We were perfect for each other. That's why he came to the audition for Dream a Little Dream with me. We literally couldn't be apart. And most of my relationships were like that after that too, because there's like, I have that codependency stuff. And I find I attract and seek out relationships that will be all enmeshed with me, you know, like first date is the U-Haul pulling into the driveway. There is no first date. I can't tell you of a first date because they don't happen. It's just move in. You know what I mean? And that's how it was.
Wow. Interesting. Lala, do you know how old Corey was when his drug use started?
I'm pretty sure he was 15, 16. The first time I remember hearing about cocaine was 15. And then on Dream a Little Dream, I thought it was okay because we were out of town and those people weren't around us. But I found out later that it was happening on Dream a Little Dream. And then on Watchers, I realized it was really out of control because there was somebody on the crew that was getting cocaine for him there. And then by the time we were done with those two movies, it was out of control. And Brooke McCarter was one of his big, he was a vampire in Lost Boys. He was one of his big drug buddies. They would do cocaine together all the time. And it just got to such a bad place where he couldn't function without doing it. And he was sleeping all day and very thin. It was sad.
Yeah, it's extremely sad. And I'm a Lost Boys fan. I know that movie pretty well. You mentioned Brooke McCarter. He played the role of Paul in the movie The Lost Boys. Brooke actually died, I believe, back in 2015 at the age of 52 in the city where I'm from, which is Tampa, Florida.
Yeah.
Lala, so basically, Corey Haim is pretty much, I'm guessing, surrounded by a bunch of enablers. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. And Feldman, too. Feldman was, too. And they would sometimes do, you know, like weekend hold, you know, shed all the windows and drapes and be up there together, you know, and I couldn't get a hold of them for 3 days. And it was just happening too much like that. And at that point, I was too afraid because of Frank.
Sure.
And Moon and my whole family was so against drugs. If you did drugs, you were an idiot and it would make you go mentally insane. That's what I was told, you know?
Yeah.
And I believed it. So I didn't really, I mean, I did snort cocaine with Corey a couple times, but it was more of like a peer pressure thing. My drug use came way later, like 22.
Yeah, it's really just a sad state of affairs. Lala, I was thinking about this last night. For all the people that are listening who maybe don't know who Corey Haim is, I mean, I'm an 80s child, you're an 80s child, obviously you dated him, but there's going to be a lot of people listening who probably don't know who Corey Haim is. I was thinking about this last night. You know, maybe the equivalent to, you know, maybe not the financials of it, but Corey Haim was probably the equivalent to, I would say maybe Justin Bieber, meaning that back then at that point in time, especially when you were dating him at that time, I mean, there was nobody bigger than Corey Haim, right? I mean, he was massive. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah. 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 You're right. It is like a Justin Bieber, totally. Yeah. Corey Haim was massive.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt.
I mean, it's the same in the sense that Justin Bieber has the screaming fans like K-pop or the Stones. That's what Corey Haim had. There's other actors that don't have that, those groups of young girls that are flipping out and crying and pulling their hair out and like chasing him everywhere. Corey had that. So, and Justin had that or has that.
Right. And what about all those 80s teen magazines?
Oh my God, the magazines, yeah. The those magazines were incredible. I remember them.
Oh yeah, got to love the 80s. Lala, now that I'm thinking about it, I mean, he was TV and not movies, but maybe to the Corey Haim level, possibly could have been Kirk Cameron.
Kirk Cameron had it. Kirk Cameron had it too, but it was, you're right, he was TV. Kirk Cameron and I have the same birthday, same year, October 12th, 1970. We went on a date. I loved him prior to going out with Corey. Kirk and I went on a date, but...
What happened with that?
He didn't have the same feelings back towards me. We only went on one date.
Funny.
He did come over to my house though, to Frank and Gail's house. So we played laser tag and that was really fun.
Awesome.
But Kirk had it.
Corey Feldman?
Corey Feldman did not have it to the extent that Corey Haim did it because Corey Haim was more appealing, physically appealing. Corey Feldman was a little weird looking, wasn't as attractive as Corey Haim, so he did have it. Lost Boys certainly had a major following and License to Drive, but Corey Haim was another level.
For sure. What was that ego like, Lala? Was it there?
Oh, yeah. 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 It's there. It's, well, they're, I mean, they're 16. They're little.
No doubt.
Both those boys didn't have supportive parents around. I mean, Judy Haim was here. She was trying to do what she could. Corey's father stayed in Canada with his sister, Carol. Corey Feldman obviously did not have support of either of his parents, but, it hits them fast and hard. You know,
yep.
They're getting recognized everywhere. They want to go to Westwood, and because they want to get the leather jacket, and they want to go see the Lost Boys at the biggest theater on the biggest screen with the biggest crowd, because it feels and it's all about the car. You know, they definitely lose themselves pretty quick.
Yeah, and my guess would be that it's probably pretty easy to do. Lala, you mentioned Westwood. Westwood, for the people listening who don't know, that's where UCLA is located. And in Westwood, there's the Fox Theater where there's a lot of movie premieres. Lala, I was doing some research last night. I watched a episode of Arsenio Hall when Corey Haim was on Arsenio Hall.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen that?
Well, there's a few, I think. But there's one where he mentions me. Is that the one you saw?
Yes, that's correct. That's the one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So Corey comes out. He sits on the couch. Arsenio asks him how old he is. And I mean, I'm not really sure what I was expecting, But it just kind of threw me for a loop. I'm not sure why, but he tells him 17 years old. And I'm sitting there and I'm going, man, I mean, right? I mean, 17 years old. I mean, he's basically just a baby.
I know.
I mean, he's so young.
Yeah.
So to go through something like that at that young of an age, it's got to be a mind trip.
Yeah. It's a major mind trip. And I honestly don't think that in the 80s, there was as much awareness as far as what's acceptable on how to treat people. Drugs on set, the Me Too movement, there's so much more awareness around mental health, what's acceptable, how to treat people. I mean, that wasn't happening in the 80s.
Yeah.
And, you know, even watching like that Neverland story, or, these parents get starstruck too.
Oh, yeah.
Back then, you know, I'm sure it still happens. I don't know. I haven't been around any child actors, teen actors, but these parents get so starstruck and they're just like, yeah, go ahead. And they don't want to be on set all day. You know, I think Alyssa was fortunate enough to have a mom that really like never left her side. So she was a little more protected from all that stuff. And some of the other kids, too. But those two boys, they didn't have any protection. And they had very dangerous people around them. They were constantly, you know, it's different now. I think it's different now as far as what kind of help is out there, what kind of acceptance is out there for somebody who's going through some kind of a drug issue or a mental health issue. But back then it was just like, none of that. You couldn't bring it up.
You mentioned Alyssa. That would be Alyssa Milano. Lala, how was he? How was Corey Haim as a person? What was he like?
He was goofy. He was silly. He was funny. He was kind, you know, he was romantic, but, that was for a very short period of time because the drugs took over quickly and it's like a Jekyll and Hyde, you know, drug addiction, especially cocaine, because cocaine is such a euphoric thing. It's delusional. You get delusional and paranoid. And he was such a different person under the influence. Abusive, violent. You know, I get tons of DMs daily. There's a whole following of people that put these edits together that are massive Corey Haim fans. And I get questions about him every single day. So, and some kids, you know, I don't know how old they are, actually. I feel like they're kids because they're into Corey Haim, and they're going through an 80s phase, but maybe some of them are a little older, but some of them have some serious shit going on, and I'm thankful that I'm able to help them if they feel safe enough talking to me about it.
Yeah, that's really kind of you to, you know, reach out to those people and offer your help.
Thank you. I always want to be the hand of AA when I can, and if they feel safe coming to me and I can help, I'll do what I can.
Yeah, again, that's really kind of you. Staying on the Corey Haim theme, Lala, how good was Lucas?
Lucas is the best. He was really talented.
Oh yeah.
I mean, he was a great actor.
Fantastic movie and definitely one of my favorite Corey Haim movies. That is for sure.
Yeah.
Lala, so what happens after Dream a Little Dream?
We do Watchers in Canada. And things get really start to fall apart. We end up breaking up after that. I mean, we were together around 2.5 years. And like I said, we broke up like 8 or 9 times. It was, you know, very codependent, bad, toxic relationship. And I think the drugs had a lot to do with that. And also my inability to let go. I was something about the way I was raised. There's a lot of I don't want to label people in my family because I'm not a doctor, but there's a lot of narcissism and a lot of borderline personality disorder, which tends to create for a child who is a people pleaser, right? So I get I was a very big people pleaser, and that also has an element of love addiction. You know, and Corey was my very first relationship. Like, I lost my virginity to him. I had never loved at that degree. I had never spent 24/7 for that many years with somebody, and I could not let go. So it was very difficult.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it definitely sounds like it. Lala, going back in the story a little bit, you had mentioned that Corey moved in with you guys. So I guess even your uncle, Frank Zappa, wasn't even able to help him, right?
No, there's no stopping. The person has to want the help, and the person has to hit a bottom. And in my case, I hit several bottoms. You know, one of the things people always ask, like, when do you hit your bottom? Like, I've been arrested, or I my mom, you know, crashed into a building. Like, when is the bottom enough? And I think it's when you stop digging. And I don't think Corey, you know, in 2002, Judy called me, and I spoke to Corey, and he was, you know, she was trying really, he went to treatment when he was 16. We took him to St. Joseph's, and he went into a treatment program, and that didn't work. He went into several. And 2002 was the last time I spoke to him, and she called me and she knew I was sober, and she was like, can you help him get to meetings? And it's like, I'll do whatever I can, but he's got to want to go. And he didn't want to go. He's like, I don't really like those things. And, you know, it works. AA works. And if you don't want to participate and show up, you can't stop anybody. You know, you just can't. Until they're ready to do it and get help. You can't. And I tried as much as I could.
Wow. Good on you for that. I tell you what, Lala, every time I hear the story, and I've heard it before, certainly not to the extent that you're telling it. You're really going in depth, and I appreciate that. But every time I hear the story, man, I tell you, it is just really sad.
It is really sad.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. But do you think there's anyone that can be held accountable or place the blame on? Look, I mean, I know you got to take accountability for yourself. I completely get it. But this was just a young kid. He had enablers around him. I mean, he was making a lot of money. He was known around the world. We talked about those things earlier. That's a complete mind trip. Obviously, he didn't have the best upbringing. It really doesn't sound like, other than, I guess, maybe you, Lala, and you know, your Uncle Frank, who brought him into the home to try to help him, doesn't really sound like anybody had his best interests at heart. Is there anybody to blame? Can you blame Hollywood, or can you blame the parents?
I do. I love Judy, and I spoke to her a few months ago, and I feel for her. I can't imagine having your son die at home with you and going through that. And I don't want to say anything that would hurt her, but I do blame family. I think. There must have been an element of Corey not feeling loved and safe enough, you know, as a child, that would, and I blame Hollywood too. I absolutely, there was a lot of enablers. There's a lot of dark stuff that people want these kids to, you know, dance a little longer and hang out on set and do what they need to do a little bit long. I mean, it's been happening since Judy Garland, right? It's just like that dark Hollywood shit is there. But I still do blame. I think it comes from even a younger age. I don't know. I think there was obviously some issues going on with Judy and her husband. I can't remember Corey's dad's name, but for them to not be together and to get a divorce, like, I know that really affected Corey. I think it's all of it.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's all of it, but Hollywood definitely didn't help.
Yeah, for sure. Lala, any idea what type of money Corey Haim was making per movie back in the day?
I honestly don't really know, but I feel like $250,000 might have been his income on Watchers, which it's not like Jim Carrey money, you know what I mean?
Sure.
But, and it was an earlier time. I'm sure that License to Drive was more than that.
Yeah.
And Lost Boys was probably, I don't know. I'm not sure what his income was, but he had at his disposal whatever he wanted. They didn't live in big fancy mansions, and you know, they lived in Studio City in this apartment complex. Judy had a two-bedroom apartment, and then Corey eventually got a two-bedroom in the same complex, and then they eventually got a house in Encino. They had a pool in the backyard, like a three-bedroom house. You know, nothing extravagant. I certainly couldn't afford it right now. Rent was a lot cheaper back then, but he had a car thing. So he would have to have the newest fancy two-door sports car, M3, every 6 months. He'd buy a new one. You know, he'd have to buy all this electronic equipment. He didn't have an issue. There wasn't an issue about money. He had it at his disposal.
Yeah, and there you go. I mean, to be that young and have that type of money at your disposal, that could be a recipe for a disaster. That is for sure. 250 grand a movie for working 3 or 4 months. Yeah, not bad at all. Lala, Corey Feldman, did you have any sort of relationship with him? I mean, not like in a romantic way, but were you guys friends?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We did, and my mother, I told you my mom had to get sober, and I would go to meetings to listen to her speak, and Corey Feldman would be there, because he eventually did get some sobriety. I don't know if he's sober anymore.
That's sad. When's the last time you talked to him?
I talked to him a few years ago. I didn't feel like he was... Maybe it's mental illness. I don't know what it was, but he didn't seem all that coherent. But he at some point he was very active in AA, and I always thought he was a good guy. You know, Drew Barrymore and I were good friends, and she was going out with Feldman, so we like did a lot of double dating.
Nice.
Yeah, I didn't know they were all doing cocaine, but. I guess that's what was going on.
Yeah, it pretty much was. I mean, Corey Haim, Corey Feldman, and Drew Barrymore. I mean, those are, teenage actors who were known for their drug use. Wanted to ask you this. What's it like to be famous? And what was it like being around somebody like Corey Haim, who was, you know, next level famous?
It's hypnotic. The attention and the choice and the options, you know, like even when I mean being with Chris was like a whole other level of being, and my best friend for many years was Amanda Anka, and her father is Paul Anka, and just like simple things like getting my passport done in the 80s and 90s, like getting your passport took weeks, and the line at the federal building was probably about 4 or 5 hours. But Paul Anka gave me this number. I called it. They escorted me to the front of the line. I got my passport in 10 minutes. It was like, that kind of shit happens. That, I mean, life is a lot easier when you are making that kind of money and you have that kind of notoriety. So we walk into restaurants, everybody's staring. There's something that feels validating about that. Even I remember, like, Drew... I was driving my Nissan Pulsar.
Nice.
In the 80s, like up Laurel Canyon. And Drew was so bad. She'd have her McDonald's, like her Happy Meal and everything. And she chucked it out the window. And I'm like, you can't litter. So we get pulled over right away. The police come over and they see the girl from E.T. sitting in the passenger seat and they let me go.
Yep.
She just littered
right
on the street, out the window, a full bag of McDonald's. And they let us go. I mean, that it's easier. It's a lot easier to have that.
Yeah, and there you go. That celebrity status clearly has its benefits, that's for sure. Lala, you mentioned Paul Anka. I don't know much about Paul Anka other than his big song way back in the day before my time, which was Put Your Head on My Shoulder. Lala, Drew Barrymore, do you still keep in touch with her?
You know what? We did hang out a little bit around 2007 and 8. She was making that roller derby movie, and I was dating the producer Barry Mandel, and they were thinking of having me come on to do wardrobe for it. And then she and I went to Austin City Limits Festival together. She was dating Justin Long at the time, and it was great to see her. I love her. I mean, she's a huge part of my childhood. We were friends on and off for a long time. We went through a lot of stuff together, and I adore her. I haven't talked to her in a long time. That was the last time I talked to her, like 07, 08.
Yep, I get it. life happens, people move on. Lala, you mentioned his name earlier. We talked about him just briefly, but I know you were married to Chris Robinson for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Lead singer of the Black Crowes. How did you guys meet?
I used to live on La Brea, and between 4th and 6th, Stephen Dorff lived on La Brea. There was a street called Cloverdale. Stephen Dorff lived on Cloverdale and 4th, and I lived just between 4th and 6th. And there was a bar called the King King on La Brea and 6th. And it was just like this little dive, like, venue. There was a band called the Red Devils that used to play there regularly. And my friend... A friend of mine worked as a video director. She represented video directors, and she loved the Black Crowes. And she was friends with this woman named Juliana, who was working with the Black Crowes, and he was coming into town, and they wanted to go out and meet at the King King that night. So when Chris walked in, he said he saw me and knew right then and there that I was the woman he was going to marry. And literally, like, he sold his house in Atlanta and moved to LA within a couple months.
There you have it.
I mean, we didn't go on a date. We moved in together.
Yeah, usually not the best of ideas. Lala, how long were you guys together?
7 years. We were together 7 years, yeah.
And how long were you married?
2 years.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
You guys still keep in touch?
I wouldn't say keep in touch. I did get contacted by Chris not too long ago, and we did, you know, we've talked a few times over the years, and we talked last year, and it wasn't good, but,
right.
You know?
Yeah, no, I get it.
Yeah.
Lala, just a few more questions, and then I'm going to, let you give out some plugs, and then you can get out of here. I want to go back to 1988, now that I'm thinking about it. Did you read for License to Drive?
I didn't read for License to Drive, but I am in a scene as an extra for 1 second because I was dating Corey and I was on set. That I feel so bad about my time on that set. I was with him, you know, like I said, we were codependent. It was 24/7 hanging out. So I was on that set every single day. And I really vibed Heather Graham, and I feel horrible about it. And I think I've heard her talk about it on Mark Maron's podcast. Like, he asked her what that experience was like, and she was like, oh my God, Lala Zappa. A lot of people thought my last name was Zappa back then, but I've actually dressed her on a commercial.
Nice. What'd she say about you?
She said that I was very difficult to have on set for that movie, that I was mean to her, and I was jealous and vibing her, and she's right. I was. And so I feel bad about that because, you know, that nobody wants to come to work and have that glaring girlfriend, and I definitely did that.
Oh, man, Lala. Hey, you know, I mean, you were young. It happens, right?
Yeah, it happens. It happens. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, not that it should, but, you know, I kind of get it. Yeah. Heather Graham, always been a fan of hers. Swingers, one of my favorite movies. Of course, she played the character of Lorraine. Lala, you are an 80s child like myself. Lala, give me some of your favorite 80s bands.
Ooh, oh my God. Okay. Depeche Mode.
Yep. Definitely one of my favorites.
The Cure.
Another one of my favorites.
Whitesnake.
What? Whitesnake?
See, because I'm all over the place. I'm not just going with the mod stuff, you know, or the Depeche Mode stuff, the sads. I love fucking Whitesnake. Cinderella. Bon Jovi. I saw Guns N' Roses so many times. I saw Cinderella open for them. I mean, living with Dweezil, I saw every rock show. Van Halen?
There you go.
How could I not mention Van Halen? AC/DC?
There you go. Van Halen works. I'm not sure about AC/DC, but Van Halen, that definitely works. Yeah, because Dweezil was an MTV VJ, right?
He was an MTV VJ, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, probably not a bad perk, you know, back in the day, having Dweezil Zappa as your cousin and an MTV VJ, all the free concerts you could probably dream of attending. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Lala, wanted to ask you, being an 80s female actress, obviously there is a ton of 80s female actresses. I can't name them all, but, you know, I mean, you got Jennifer Connelly, Mia Sara, Drew Barrymore, Diane Franklin, Molly Ringwald. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Who do you look at or who would you say was maybe an 80s female actress that you really admired, or an 80s female actress that you look back on now and go, wow, I really liked her?
Well, I loved Helena Bonham Carter. I mean, she was a little bit of an older age range. I think Jennifer Connelly is amazing. I love her work. Drew Barrymore, I think what she's done for her career is incredible. I love her.
For sure.
I wasn't a big Mia Sara fan, but I get it. I can get it. Let's see, who else was there? I loved the redhead in Lucas. I can't remember her name. I loved, unfortunately, we lost her to addiction. Can't Buy Me Love actress.
Amanda Peterson.
Yeah. Loved her. She was great. She was good friends with Meredith. I think they did a movie together or something. There was so many. Jennifer Grey was great.
Oh yeah, for sure. Can't forget about Jennifer Grey. Also, Leah Thompson. Can't forget about Leah Thompson either. She was fantastic. Lala, the redhead that you're referring to in the movie Lucas, that was Carrie Green. She played the role of Maggie. But Lala, I wanted to circle back around to Mia Sara. I mean, come on, Lala. Yeah, she didn't do a ton of stuff, but she absolutely killed it in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
She did kill it, and I totally get it. I don't think I saw her in much else. Molly Ringwald. I mean, come on. John Hughes, I read for Jennifer Connelly's part in the one with Frank, you know, where they're trapped in the Target all night.
Yeah, of course. Career Opportunities. Great movie.
Yeah, that was a great movie. Yeah.
Did you know John Hughes?
Well, I read for him. Yeah, I think I read for two movies of his, but that one I definitely read for him for that movie.
Nice.
But I knew Molly. She dated Dweezil for a long time.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Almost done, Lala. Who were some of the actors or actresses from back in the day that people who are listening right now may know of that you still keep in touch with?
Ione Sky and I have been friends since we were like 13. I keep in touch with her. I actually have talked to Scott Grimes in the last 2 years, but I hadn't for like 20 years. Christine Applegate. Why am I blanking? This is the aging thing. Juliette Lewis.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. I love her. Juliette Lewis.
Anybody else?
David Arquette. I keep in touch with him. I love him.
Very cool. Yeah, he was fantastic in the Scream movies.
Yeah.
All right, Lala, here we go. Very last question. We didn't talk about it a whole lot, but you're somebody that has battled addiction and drug abuse, and you've gone through rehab, in and out of rehab. Looking back on it all, is there anything that you would change?
I wouldn't change it for anything. I wish I had made different choices. I wish I'd gotten help sooner for my self-esteem and my trauma, because that would have made life easier for me by now, because it has gotten pretty hard, and I do get angry sometimes at what I can provide for my child. I want to provide a lot more. Money just gives you choice. You know, choice to go to the right school, choice to do the ballet class longer. And I don't have that choice because I'm not earning enough right now. But I will. And I wouldn't change a thing. All of it has turned me into who I am. And I actually love who I am now. And I didn't at that time. I wish I would have. I wish I would have appreciated it. But I appreciate who I am now. And that's all that matters. And that's what it took to get me there.
Very well said, Lala. I like that answer. Keep moving forward.
Thanks.
Lala, what is your Instagram? What's your Twitter? What's your Facebook? Give me all your social media stuff.
I'm just under Lala Sloatman on all of them. Well, no, Twitter, I'm under Hey Lala, but everything else is Lala Sloatman.
There you go. Pretty simple. Lala Sloatman, Sloatman. Lala, do you get people, like, I guess, like fans writing you? And Lala, also too, do you respond to people who do get in contact with you and, you know, just ask you questions about your career, ask you questions about Corey? Do you respond to those people?
I always do. They do, and I always do.
Okay, cool.
I don't respond to the guys that are like, hey, beautiful.
That's so cringy.
Those don't get a response. They get an immediate delete.
Right.
But anybody who asks me about Corey or my work or any of that stuff, I always respond.
Very cool. I like it. Guys, make sure you check out Lala on social media, @Lala Sloatman. Lala, you are done. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to come on the podcast and answer all my questions. Your stories were absolutely fantastic. Once again, thank you very much and best of luck to you the rest of the way.
Thank you so much, Cliff. I'm so happy to have been here with you. I appreciate all your questions and thank you for giving me an opportunity to talk about all of this craziness I talked about. And I wish you the best success with your podcast. Being Famous Podcast, I don't know if I'm famous, but thanks for having me.
Rock on. I like it. Hope everybody enjoyed my conversation with Lala Sloatman. Guys, don't forget, if you did like this conversation and if you've enjoyed previous conversations and previous podcasts, you can help me out by donating to my PayPal account. It is info@beingfamouspodcast.com. That's info@beingfamouspodcast.com. You want to help your boy out and throw him a few dollars? That would be greatly appreciated. Guys, doesn't matter what the dollar amount is. It can be $5, $20, $30, whatever it may be. Anything that you donate is greatly appreciated. For more information about me, about the podcast, to listen to previous episodes, and to donate, you can also visit my webpage, beingfamouspodcast.com. Once again, hope everybody enjoyed my conversation with Lala Sloatman. I will talk to you guys on the next podcast. Peace.